Kathy.
Hey, Bobby, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
And welcome to all of you. This is The Upside of Pajama.
Our first podcast about behavior.
Yes, absolutely. And my name is Bobby Hoadley. I'm an applied behavior analyst, and my company is called Parlay Services, and we spend all our time working around behavior.
Well, and my name's Kathy Knights, and I don't know anything about behavior, except that sometimes I'm guilty of a little bad behavior now and then.
I love that about you. Kathy and I are good friends. And Kathy's an expert on podcasting, aren't you?
I'm only an expert on podcasting because I listen to podcasts all the time. But I will admit that sometimes I listen to them just so that they'll help me fall asleep.
I know.
I don't want this one to do that for me.
That's why I thought you'd be the perfect person to talk with me about behavior, because if I can keep you awake, this is going to be good.
All right. Well, then.
Okay.
Let's talk behavior.
There's so many myths and misconceptions about behavior in our society. And when you think all the time we've been on this earth, that we would know how to interact with each other better and work together better to maybe solve some of the world's problems. But in fact, we have a lot of myths and a lot of misconception about behavior. Despite that, science has given us tons of good information, especially in the last 100 years, about how behavior works and how to understand each other in a better way. And so I'm kind of hoping, Kathy, that you and I can delve into some of those topics and maybe have some better understanding around it.
All right. So behavior basically is how we interact with other people, why we do the things we do, why we keep making the same mistakes, and when what we can do to change that behavior. And there are ways to do that scientifically so that we become better, more productive people. Is that what I get?
There is, if you want to.
If
you want to. You can't make somebody behave any way you want them to, right? You have to, as an individual, decide that you want to change your behavior, that you like it or you dislike it, or that there are good reasons to do things differently. Let's get that out there. On the start, we can't make other people behave, but we certainly can do a lot about our own behavior and making our world a better place and our lives work better for us. And when we talk about behavior, what we're talking about is how we act, how we interact, and how we react in all our environments.
Grown-ups.
As grown-ups, absolutely. It's important to state that, too, because the science of behavior is used very much more with children and parenting. And Parlay Services works with adults. And we work with a lot of people with very good intelligence. We certainly work with people who have diagnoses. Mostly we deal with people who have all the best intentions in the world, but it doesn't always turn into the actions, interactions, and reactions that are successful.
So you're saying you're never too old to learn a new behavior?
I'm telling you, if you aren't learning, then you're losing.
Got it. Well, I guess as an adult, oftentimes I do things, and afterwards I think, oh my God, why did I do that? Or why did I do that again? Why do I always do that? And similarly, I might say to somebody else, why do you always
exactly
do that?
So we're going to explore all of that kind of information and hopefully maybe give you some new ways to think about that and ways to understand it so you don't have to ask those questions or you have to ask them, but then you actually know how to maybe problem solve around them.
Well, you know, every New Year's Eve, I make resolutions, and one of them is to stop swearing. I haven't managed that one yet. And the second one is always be a nicer person.
Why would you want to stop swearing? And how could you possibly be a nicer person? I don't even get that. Behavior. Why would you change behavior if it's not a problem for you?
Well, I just think that sometimes I'm kind of a bitch and I don't want to be. But what you are saying, that if I do want to, maybe every year I've been making this resolution, but I haven't known how to change my behavior so that I can
That's
be
exactly
a nicer person. All right, well, let's...
And you know what? Your first mistake is you wait until New Year's.
That's true.
And then you forget the next day.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start today. It's hardly New Year's. So starting today, we are going to learn.
Does this mean I can't swear or be a bitch when I'm around you?
No, we're allowed to swear because this is a podcast. So it's not like on the radio. We can swear all we want.
Okay.
But so far, so good.
Okay.
All right. Well, then let's talk behavior.
All right. Initially, we're just going to talk about what do we know about behavior? What are the facts about behavior? So as I said, science has been studying behavior for the last 100 years. A lot of what I go on is that science, but I go on what I observe in the world around me. The evidence that I can collect personally from the people I know and the people I work with and how I learn about behavior basically in my environments, and then I apply the science. There's good science, even though some people don't like science these days. This has been 100 years worth of science, and really it's becoming more and more well known because it's being used against us a lot.
I think that's a subject of another podcast.
I know. I'll often tell people, you want to learn about behavior because if you don't, it will be used against you. And the science really does allow manipulation. I would never do that. And the more we learn, the more I realize that in applied behavior analysis, what we have is a technology of common sense. Things that every time I read a research article, I think, oh, of course, makes total sense. Good behavioral science should make very much common sense.
But as human beings, we know what makes common sense, but we don't necessarily behave in that way.
Yeah, it doesn't change what we do, how we act or interact or react. So let's talk about some of those facts about behaviors.
Okay.
Number one, all behavior is an adaptation. So you've learned the behavior to adapt to your environments.
Good thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you've been doing that since the moment you were born. Actually, you were probably doing it prenatally as your brain developed. That's how you become the most wonderful, complex person that you are and have this personality that's incredibly unique in the world because no one else has had to adapt to your particular environment and experience at the ages that you've had to. Maybe somebody has.
And yet, you're saying that it's a scientific thing. So if everybody's completely different, how can you possibly apply the same set of science to everybody else?
Well, that's the beauty of it. I mean, that's the reason why I love behavior analysis is because everything is a new puzzle.
Ah.
Something new to come to understand and analyze and support someone else's understanding of how their behaviors adapted in the way that they did. But what's lovely about the science of behavior is that it sets this very elegantly simple framework on human behavior as a whole, and the complexities of you and I, or each of us, then marry that in quite a nice package that's a lot of fun to work with.
Cool. That's great.
And we've got lots of podcasts to talk about just how that occurs.
Wonderful.
So some of the facts.
Okay.
All behavior is an interaction with the environment. You know, it used to be for the longest time, everyone thought, well, I'm a master of my own domain. I exercise choice and control all the time. Well, you know, that's not all that true.
Oh, man.
You certainly can do that. But it takes brain work, right? As you move through your day, in general, you're just interacting with your environment. And a lot of people say to me, well, sometimes I'm all by myself and I have all these inner workings in my brain and I'm not interacting. But I'll challenge you to tell me when you're doing that, all that stuff by yourself in your brain, you know, you're sitting around at home listening to music, drinking your glass of wine, cooking a nice dinner. Everything that's running through your brain, it's all about actions, interactions, and reactions, isn't it?
I think you're right. That's true.
Yeah.
What am I going to do at work tomorrow? What am I going to do if he says this to me?
How did I deal with that
situation? Why did I do that? Exactly.
So in my world, all of that is interacting with your environment. You're still doing it. You're just not in the moment.
Yep.
And your emotions, that's emotional behavior. It's still an action, an interaction, a reaction, a way that your organism is interacting with the environment.
Huh. Okay.
We have these beautiful, amazing brains. Everyone does. I don't think there's any such thing as stupid. All brains are doing this all the time. And it's fascinating. It is really fascinating. And the more we understand about that, the better we become at being ourselves.
Okay, so I'm going to learn more and more about how behavior is an interaction with the environment. Got it.
So you're also going to learn about how all behavior is functional. There's a purpose to it, not one you're aware of. A lot of that's under the radar.
Okay.
But, you know, all those things you say, oh, I shouldn't do that, or I should do that, or I never want to do that again. And it keeps happening.
Right. It's happening for a reason?
It's happening for a reason, a very good reason. It serves, it has a function for you.
Even bad behavior?
Even bad behavior.
Huh. Okay.
It is functional. There's no such thing as dysfunctional behavior. If it was dysfunctional, it would stop. It would stop occurring and something else would take its
because
place.
Because it wasn't serving a function.
Absolutely.
Because oh my gosh.
It wasn't serving a function. Now, that doesn't mean that it's purposeful. It's not purposeful.
You mean I'm not doing it on purpose or it's not achieving a purpose?
It doesn't necessarily achieve a productive purpose, right? Okay. So it might be counterproductive. It might be unsuccessful.
Right.
Right?
But we still do it.
But we're still doing it because there's a function to it.
And so part of your study
is
to figure out what function it's serving.
Right. So if you came to Parley Services and you'd say, like, I keep doing this, it's really working against me, like losing big time. I want to be a success.
Right.
How do I do that? Because this behavior stands in my way. Then I would say to you, you know what? We're going to do an analysis of that behavior. We're going to understand what keeps it going.
Okay.
How did it adapt? What makes it functional? What keeps it going in your world? Then we actually have some keys and some tools to open up the doors and fix things up.
Now, is that often a surprise to the person when they find out why they're doing a certain thing?
You know, honestly, it's wonderful. Beauty of applied behavior analysis is we're all pragmatists. If it doesn't work, throw it out. Keep trying and trying and trying until you get the answer, until you get what works.
And then when you get what works and you tell me.
And I tell you, you know what I usually see from you and everybody around you is this beautiful aha moment. And then I know I got it right. This like, wow, how did I never know that? Of course that's what's going on.
Okay, good. So we're going to find out that that behavior serves a function.
All behavior is functional.
I'm looking forward to all of these.
Absolutely. We also know that all behavior is automatic. Remember we had that discussion about a master of your domain, having all this choice and control. Well, right. The truth of the matter is, I mean, your brain is making decisions. Behavior is occurring all the time. There's like this behavior stream going on. And we'll talk about the behavior stream again in the future, too. You have so many behaviors occurring. Like right now, as I'm watching you, you're clasping your hands and fiddling your fingers. You're smiling. You're blinking your eyes. You're thinking. You're listening. You're trying to come up with how we can. I know.
That's funny. And that's all behavior.
Crossing. It's all behavior.
And I'm not aware of it.
No. So really, one of the hardest things our brains do, social interaction, what you and I are doing now. One of the more difficult things that it's great brain exercise. But if your brain had to ask you, right?
Should I cross my
right
leg now?
Yeah. What happens is three times you do something, you get a successful result. All three times, guess what? You've got a baseline for that behavior. It's going to keep occurring. Your brain has created a neural connection.
Wow.
And there's a little mantra I use around that. Neurons that fire together, wire together.
Neurons that fire together, wire together.
Yeah. And when you were a little kid, three times wasn't even necessary. You just pick up so much and constantly, all the time.
Okay, so wait. When I'm talking to somebody and I say, how many times do I have to tell you? It should only be three. Well, what happens if they don't adapt to the behavior I want in three? I failed.
Because telling isn't teaching. And we're going to do a podcast around that, too.
Telling isn't teaching.
That's why.
You can tell somebody to do something, but they don't learn.
You're just exercising a pattern of your own behavior that's not necessarily successful.
Oh, my gosh. Is there anything positive about this? Because so far I'm feeling that I haven't succeeded very well at raising myself or my children.
Oh,
I'm never going to get that resolution solved.
Okay. All right. So the next one is, all behavior is learned and shaped by its consequence.
All behavior is learned and shaped by its consequences. Do something, it feels good. You want to do it again?
Yeah.
Do something feels bad, you learn maybe not to do that.
Beautiful. Right. They have to be systematic consequences.
Okay.
So learn something, it feels, or do something, it feels good, you're going to try it again. Next time you try it in the wrong situation with the wrong person or the wrong thing, and you might realize, oh, wait a minute.
Doesn't feel good.
When you're young, if you don't get systematic consequences, you'll say, well, it only works in that one isolated situation. So the place where you get most of those systematic consequences, I'll bet you can guess.
I can't guess.
I don't know. In your family.
Oh, of course. Oh, I see. So you're saying like, oh, good, good, Kathy. You did, that was a good job. And then you want to keep washing the dishes.
Right, right. Or when that only works. Well, any parent will tell you that only works for a short period of time. Around the dishes.
But I guess like trying new foods and that sort of thing. Kids that are picky eaters.
Yeah.
Here we are talking about childhood and you don't deal with children, but I can see like
I
introducing foods.
I know
and
a lot
kind
of
stuff.
The studies around kids, which I can interject. Messy eaters.
Yeah.
Have mothers who don't like vegetables.
Shut up.
Yeah. Typically.
Fussy eaters have mothers who don't like vegetables. That makes no sense to me.
I will cite these behavioral studies that have really good information. Is it 100% of the time? No. No, it isn't. Typically, you've got a mother who doesn't like vegetables and the kid's a fussy eater.
Wow.
I know, isn't that? It's something
that makes no sense to me. And you said it was all common sense behavior.
It doesn't make sense. It makes sense to me. So I always get these little studies and then I try them on people, as I said, right? Like I never just take the science. I always got to go out there and
I love vegetables
out.
And I have a daughter who doesn't like vegetables at all. What's
is
that?
Is she a fussy eater?
A little bit. Well, she won't eat vegetables.
No, no. We're not saying that children who don't eat vegetables have mothers who don't eat vegetables. We're saying she's going to have a fussy eater.
Oh.
She's going to have a fussy eater.
She goes to restaurants.
She enjoys all kinds of food.
My grandchild is going to be a fussy eater.
You bet.
You're going to have to help me.
You're going to have to help me down the road.
I'm in trouble now.
Oh, I wouldn't address that behavior. It's not considered to be a problem. She'll stay alive.
Oh,
your grandchild.
Funny. Okay.
He or she. Oh, we digress.
Yes, we do. But it's interesting. So you get all of these interesting studies and then you can actually test them out.
I like to read the science and then go out in the real world and
see how it applies.
See how it applies. Talk to folks.
Wow.
Yeah. Lots of fun. So, shaped by its consequences. So we talked about that and where those systematic consequences are typically in your family system. So a lot of the work that I do is getting back to your learning history. But I want to put in a caveat here that parents this is not all parents. I mean, it used to be it was all on the mother, right? That was a Freudian thing that your mother
screwed you up.
Totally messed you up. If you were messed up, it had to be your mother. Like, that is so not true. Not true. And delving into your learning history and your family system doesn't mean that your parents didn't do a great job if you got, something wrong or going wrong. Your life has been so influenced by your environment, and that's not the only environment you've been in. And the things they can't control for are sometimes the things that get to you. So I had a father who died before I was a year old. It changed the environment of my childhood in many, many, many ways. How people reacted to me at school, all different ways.
Right.
How my siblings interacted. So it wasn't how my mother raised me. You have wonderful parents who taught you well, right?
Yes, I do.
But it's not just those explicit things. Those are important. Parents need to see their role as teachers in their children's lives. But the implicit ones, what gets modeled, how people cope, how people act, interact, and react in your environment as you move through developmental stages, your parents can't control all that, and they can't manage it all either. So just because we're looking into your learning history doesn't mean we're looking to blame your parents for everything that's wrong with you. If I had a client who came to me and said, it's all my parents' fault, I would say, not anymore. You're a grown-up.
Right. Well, and we assume that maybe we can't change, or people assume that about us, that he's always been like that. He's never going to change. You can't teach a dog new tricks and all that kind of stuff.
We're going to talk about that stuff too.
Well, it's good to know. It's heartening to know that we can still change things.
Absolutely. Always. Always. You learned it. You can relearn it. You can unlearn it. You can learn something better that works better.
Okay.
And when you do, you'll get more reinforcement for it. And there's no looking back.
I'll be a nicer person.
There's no looking back.
There's no looking back. Okay. Here we go.
Okay. And finally, all behaviors measurable and predictable.
Oh, come on.
No, it is.
No, come on.
It is.
What about spontaneity in the world? What about flexibility in the world? What about, I got to come on. Predictable, you know what I'm going to be like every time you see me? Explain that to me.
All right. Flexible behavior. It's a behavior. Spontaneity.
Is a behavior?
Is a behavior.
Okay.
What's measurable and predictable are those patterns of behavior. The way that your brain has learned to adapt and cope in all situations, the brain develops patterns. So those patterns repeat, and you can measure those. So I can certainly measure how spontaneous you are in any given visit we have with each other, right? I could certainly measure that. And you know what? Probably informally too, because when you're not as spontaneous or flexible, then I know my friend might be feeling bad about something.
Okay, great.
Right?
Or I guess somebody that's always really comfortable in a big social situation and that somebody else isn't, that's based on their learning patterns as they got.
Absolutely.
They went through life.
We can measure that and predict that. So we actually can measure how much attention a person needs to be satiated and what'll throw them into deprivation. And for every one of us, that's different.
So when we often say, like, oh, my God, she's so needy. Why is she so needy?
Oh, yeah.
And but we might not be right.
There's good reasons for that. It's functional, right? It's functional for that person. And what I will tell you is a person who's no good at recruiting attention, the attention they need,
right,
and they're in deprivation, that's going to make a more needy person. Why? Because they won't get good, positive social attention, which is like gold. What they'll get is more judgmental or discriminated attention, right? Attention that where people are edgy or irritable with them. Well, you know what that means? That means that they're going to keep going because they need the attention, but that attention has less value. It kind of creates a black hole of attention need because they're not getting the positive social.
People want attention, and if they can get is bad attention, then so be it.
That's what they'll take. Because they don't have a good alternate or replacement behavior to get the good positive social.
But what about the person where they always seem kind of, that one's difficult. That guy's hard to get along with. He's hard to like. But so I'm always doing this. I'm always trying to make him feel more relaxed. I'm always going to her house. I always include her in social events. And it just never seems like...
But
they are happy.
But how much do you really warm up and be genuine to them?
That's interesting. So they know that you're just doing it.
You know, we
to make myself feel better, maybe.
Well,
is that true? I'm analyzing myself.
I'm not analyzing you.
that might be very dangerous.
Okay, you can't do this.
I'm trying to figure it out. I don't have the science behind me. Well, you know what I know is that it is a fascinating thing. I am always, always completely fascinated and flummoxed by all of these conversations. So I can see that we've got a lot to learn ahead of us. And if like you said, if I can stay awake and learn it, maybe we can share it with the rest of the world. So where will we start next week?
So let's start talking about that measurable and predictable. Because there's one of the great myths in our society is that behavior is random and unpredictable. We look at a behavior and it just occurs, right? Like CNN would have us all believing that every horrible thing that a person does was completely random and unpredictable, right? And it strikes fear in our hearts.
Sure.
I got to tell you, I deal with a lot of really wonderful people who are smart people, but I deal with people whose behaviors would be deemed to be horribly bad, who have never been able to cope or get along in this world, who have done things that obviously none of us would want to have done to us.
But you're saying that that behavior was not random.
And it was not unpredictable. And that there's no such thing as random and unpredictable behavior. So that's what we'll talk about next time. How's that?
I'm excited. All right. I'll see you then.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.